going to go ahead and get started with the Senate Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee hearing for April 17th. Today, what we have on our agenda, the item that we have on our agenda is Senate File 2597, which is the authorization of the MinPass facilities on a segment of Interstate Highway 35E between Highway 94 and Interstate Highway 694. It's come to the attention of this chair that some more information is probably needed and some more discussion about this, and I very much appreciate the folks that are here to testify and give us the information that we need on this very important project. It's important to MnDOT and our transportation system here in the metro area, and it's also a priority of this chair. So we need the best information that we can get on it so people can make an informed decision. And I very much, again, appreciate the folks that are here to testify. We have a lengthy list, and I would ask that each of the testifiers keep their remarks concise. We want to make time for committee members to ask questions and to engage in a dialogue as best we can here during this discussion of this strategy. First up is Nick Thompson with MnDOT to give us an overview of the MinPass system and how it works, and we appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Nick Thompson from MnDOT, and I would like to give you just a basic background on what MinPass is, what the region's plans are for MinPass, and even in its simplest sense, how the system works and why this is our strategy for the future, and specifically how it relates to our investments on 35E. So in the context of why we're talking about MinPass today and why this is our key investment strategy for the region is our goal is to provide a healthy multimodal transportation system in the Twin Cities. We feel that is critical for the region's economic vitality and for the quality of life of the citizens and businesses in Minnesota. The challenges we face as a department is that we have an aging freeway infrastructure out there, much of it built over 50 years ago. We have corridors that are highly congested, that have increasing growth projected. We have rising costs in our, particularly in our mobility investments, where we have to make major investments. The cost of those projects are getting very high. And then we're facing tight fiscal constraints and a lot of needs for our transportation dollar. As a region, we've adopted key strategies for our long-range plan that to deal with the mobility and congestion issues in the region. Our three key strategies are to develop low-cost, high-benefit projects, small projects that relieve bottlenecks, that fix key problems causing mobility, develop multimodal investments, including MinPass, which is a multimodal investment, and then as a region, our expansion avenue is our MinPass system and building a network of our MinPass system. At its core, I'd like to describe what MinPass is. MinPass is our brand name for our congestion pricing system in Minnesota. The congestion pricing is a optional variable toll system that allows you to control the free flow of traffic in one lane on a freeway, and it's a system that's built within the current context of our freeway network. It's a system that only operates when the demand is at its peak in the peak hours, in AM and PM rush hours, or one of the two. When it's not peak hours, it's a system that is open to all users. It's free to use and free to use the lane. There's different users that use the MinPass system, buses, carpools with two or more people, motorcycles. They get to use the MinPass lane for free. And then solo drivers driving alone can opt in and use the lane when they want to have a reliable trip. What you see in front of you is a map of our planned MinPass investments that we would see over the long term. The corridor, we've started MinPass on 394 in 2005. We've expanded that MinPass system to 35W starting in 2009, with segments opening in 2009, 2010, and a two-mile segment in Burnsville opening last year, 2011. Our next corridor, high-priority corridor, and why we're having this hearing today is around the 35E corridor, which you see highlighted in red from downtown St. Paul to 694 in the north. How MinPass works. If you're a MinPass customer driving alone, you have one of these little boxes in your car. This is a transponder that is tied to your account that you mount right behind your rear-view mirror and your front windshield. And as you drive down the road, in this system, this is what the 35E system would look like. We have currently today, if you're heading northbound, you have three lanes of traffic. We're proposing to build a fourth lane of traffic on the left side. That would be the MinPass system. And a solo driver driving down the road, if they decide they really need a reliable trip today, they want to bypass some congestion, they see a sign that tells them what the price would be if they enter the lane at that time. They enter the lane. In this example, it's 25 cents to travel from, downtown St. Paul to 694. They enter the lane. They drive under a little reader projected there with the blue car, and it reads their transponder and deducts 25 cents from their pre-established account. It's a very simple system. This is a transponder that works on all on 394, 35W. You have one count for your transponder, and you can use that in any part of the network. If you're a carpooler, you don't need a transponder at that time. If you're on a bus, you obviously don't need the transponder. Since we've had this since 2005, I thought I'd give you a little bit of our system use and performance measures. We have over 23,000 customers with transponders out there. We poll our customer base every year. We've asked them about their satisfaction. Over 90% of them are very satisfied with the MinPass system and what the benefits it provides for them. They see it as two key advantages. It provides them always with a reliable trip. They know that if they have to get somewhere on their corridor, they will be able to use MinPass, and they'll know exactly how long that time will take because it's reliable every day. It also is they like it because they get to choose. Some days they don't need MinPass. They don't have to pay anything. They don't use the system. Some days they really have to get home or get to work or get to a meeting, and they like to have that option, and they get to make the decision about what the price is and if they use it or not. We also polled our transit users and operators. They strongly support this system because it provides them a more reliable trip, a higher performing trip. Carpoolers are very satisfied with this system also. We're asked about who uses MinPass, and it's the users of the corridor. The demographics of the corridor represent the demographics of who has MinPass transponders and carpoolers and transit riders. So whatever corridor you put it in, it gets adopted by the users of that corridor. From a revenue and expenditure standpoint, in 2011, we took in a little over $2 million in tolls between the two roads and transponder fees. You lease these transponders from MnDOT. We're a little over $400,000. Our operating and maintenance cost was about $2.5 million to operate the back end, the customer service center, operate the system with the customers. It's important to note that the purpose of our tolling in this instance is to provide a reliable congestion-free trip. It's not to maximize revenue. And so we set the price based on the demand that currently is there. We set the price as low as we can to maintain a free-flow trip. And that's unlike traditional tolling systems where everybody pays or your goal is to maximize investment to pay off an investment. So why is this the key strategy we want to pursue in Minnesota? Number one, it provides the customer faster, safer, more reliable travel options. That's a proven from our experience on our two roads we've built it on. It's also a regional transit system. These corridors with MinPass have high transit use. They take advantage of this. They get very high transit ridership, and it's a key component there. It's very efficient also. It provides a very efficient movement of a lot of people in the lane during the peak time, which is the peak hour, the peak period. It's a market-based approach. It aligns the cost with the benefit of the individual driver. They get to decide whether or not the congestion-free trip is worth the price that they see displayed, and they make the choice in real time based on their own individual, where they have to go, and the value of their time. And it optimizes our performance. We are carrying, in the peak hour, we are carrying a lot more people in the MinPass lane than a general purpose lane because we have high transit ridership, high carpool use, and then we're allowing that extra capacity to be used by solo drivers. When we poll customers, we talk about why, you know, what is important to them in their peak period trip. It's not that we're striving to have a congestion-free Twin Cities. That's just not an attainable goal. What drivers want in the Twin Cities is they want to be able to count on their trip. They want a reliable trip. And the only way to provide that is through a MinPass system where you're managing demand with pricing. And so they like that option of a reliable trip, and this is the key strategy we have for that. Also, from a sustainability standpoint, when we're making an investment like we are in 35E, we're making that investment because there's a congestion problem. And we need, when we open that lane and we construct it and we open it, we need that investment to be sustained over time. We don't want it to be congested a year or two later through because we just made that investment. These are investments that have to last 30, 40 years. And so by putting a MinPass system on there, we have a benefits. We can count on there being a congestion-free lane for the long term, unlike a general-purpose lane. Our experience over the past 10 years, we've built general-purpose lanes in the Twin Cities, and almost every one of them has been congested within a few years of that being open. And whereas our MinPass system on 394 today remains uncongested, remains a reliable trip since its opening in 2005. Specifically on 35E, we have a extensive investments plan for this corridor. It's time to rebuild this corridor to make it a modern freeway. We have over $261 million of investments planned or proposed being MinPass. And we want to coordinate these investments in the best way because these will be disruptive construction projects. We want them coordinated so that we have the least disruption to commuters in the shortest period of time. And that's why it's a good time to build MinPass on 35E. Beginning later this year, we will be advertising for replacement of the Cayuga Bridge, which is the most major project here. Rebuilds all of 35E from Maryland Avenue to downtown St. Paul. There's transit investments going on within this corridor that tie very well with the MinPass system. We also have an aging infrastructure with our pavements out there. Our Better Roads for Better Minnesota program has targeted this corridor for replacement of the pavements. They're in tough shape, and they need to be replaced. So this is the time that we make our expansion opportunity for this corridor. We coordinate all these investments along with MinPass. We expand this corridor, and we can start this project as soon as next year. This is also our last mobility investment opportunity for 35E and for many of our corridors out there. We are constrained within the footprint that we have. We can fit one more lane on these corridors, and when we make that investment for mobility, that should be an investment that we protect in the long term. And by coordinating our investments, getting park and rides built in at the same time, we have a high ridership really built into the system when MinPass opens. We went through a regional planning process that identified the best corridors for MinPass throughout the region. And 35E rose to the top as being the next best corridor we make that investment. It has the reasons I mentioned. It has infrastructure that needs to be replaced. It has over 6 hours of congestion occurring daily. It has crash issues, but the crash issues are related to congestion. They're rear-end collisions. And so MinPass and doing an expansion here can deal with the crash issues. It has a high transit demand and a transit infrastructure that uses that corridor, including a transit facility where we are sending buses out, and so they have very efficient bus operations. The bus operation efficiency of a MinPass I can highlight from our experience on 35W with our Lakeville park and ride that we built along with our MinPass investment has an over 70% fare box return on transit out of that facility. So these coordinated investments make your transit investments very efficient too. And as I mentioned, we have a lot of investments that we are going to occur in this quarter no matter what. So it's the time to make this expansion investment also. We have been out over the past 6 months talking with communities and agencies and interested parties throughout this corridor in the region to explain exactly what I'm doing today, what MinPass is, why we make this investment, why this is the right investment for the region. What MinPass is different. You know, it's something you have to explain. It's been on the west part of the metro, and so as we go out in these communities, many have not heard of MinPass, and so just the basics of why we're making this investment has been part of our extensive outreach that we've done. And through that, we've gotten letters of support, which are in your packet from the communities listed here. And also, we went to the Rush Line Task Force and got support from the task force as the right investment for this corridor. And we've gotten interest and strong support from a lot of the citizens when we've been out meeting with them and talking to them.
Senator Howe, did you have a
question? Just a question back when you were talking about the lease. Tim. Is it a dollar and a half a month? Is that what it is?
That's the lease fee, current lease fee, yes.
And then how long do the person have to lease it? And the second question is when a person who has one drives let's say they have a carpool, so they don't need to pay. They can shut it off then.
Yep. It just pops out of the clip, and that turns it off.
Okay.
And so a lot of people are – sometimes you have a carpool today, and tomorrow your rider isn't there, so it's a good option to go between being a carpool and being a solo driver. And then the lease fee is tied to replacement cost of these, and so these need to be replaced about every 5 years, and so the lease fee goes with that. We explore different options for customers. They could buy it, lease it. In some places, some cities, they give away the transponders, and we found that the lease fee was the lowest cost to the customer and also the one that attracted the most customers, so that's the model we went with.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. You can continue.
That concludes my presentation. Unless there's questions, and I'd be happy to answer other questions.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thompson, I like the concept of adding another lane by narrowing the lanes, and that's part of my concern about this is why do we need to add MinPass when mostly what we're doing is narrowing the lanes to create another lane? You know, so to me, we already have revenues that have been coming in to do this kind of thing, and to say then we have to add MinPass to it is where I have the problem.
Mr. Thompson.
The reason we're adding MinPass to a 35E is because there's a congestion problem. And if we add a general purpose lane to that corridor, a fourth lane, in the short term, the congestion would be relieved. But after that, the congestion would come back. In terms of narrowing the lane, this is what it'll look like on 35E. The lanes will still be 12 feet wide like they are today. What we're narrowing is the left shoulder from 6 to 8 feet to down to 4 feet. So we'll maintain a similar lane width that you have. We're dealing with the congestion problem with the MinPass investment.
Senator Gazalka?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But that's my point, is we're not actually adding a whole new piece of asphalt. We are taking mostly the existing asphalt and creating another lane within that. And that's why I'm saying we already have the road system there. Why are we going to add another fee to that, particularly in this area?
Sure.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we're expanding it a little bit, so there is a major investment. We're rebuilding the entire pavement on this corridor. And as we mentioned, the MinPass will benefit every user on that corridor because you're expanding the corridor. You're adding capacity. So even if you're not paying the fee, we've created capacity to deal with increasing demand over time. So if you're in the general purpose lane, your trip will be less congested too because we're shifting some of that to the MinPass lane. If we just built it, we could build it as a general purpose lane and it would become congested again and have less efficiency and then we'd be done. We can't expand that corridor anymore because of the built-up environment around that corridor. If you expand beyond that footprint, you all of a sudden get into a very expensive project because all your bridges need to be widened. You start to have to acquire a lot of right-of-way. With this model, we don't have to acquire very little, if any, right-of-way to fit within that footprint. But this is the last time we can do that type of investment because that's the limited space that we have.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Thompson. So how many accidents happen in this corridor annually?
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'd have to go get back to you on that. I don't have that number offhand. But we do know the higher number of accidents occur in the peak period. There are accidents off peak, but most of them occur in the peak period because it's a congested corridor, and that's where, in a freeway environment, that's where most of your crashes are.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Thompson. So when there is an accident currently, the vehicles that are in that accident are able to use the shoulder on the left or on the right to stage while the tow trucks are coming, while the police are coming and facilitating that. With a 4 foot lane and the or median on the left, where will those vehicles go if the vehicles that are in the accident are in the left two lanes? How will we handle those facilities in that case?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator. Currently, 35E has varying left shoulders. In some places, there is no left shoulder at all, particularly south of Maryland Avenue. And so in that instance where crashes are in the left lane, they are blocking the left lane. They have to actually be pushed off the bridges to a right shoulder. throughout the stretch after that, you do have right shoulder. So our goal is always to move them to the right shoulder. Other sections of 35E have shoulders currently that are too narrow for even a lane or for a stall. So in general, there's very little space today on the left. There is a full right shoulder today. There will be a full right shoulder after this project is done. And so our plan would be the same. We would move them all to the right shoulder to get them out of there. We have it's a corridor that is patrolled by State Patrol, also patrolled by the Freeway Incident Response Team. So our clearance to the right shoulder is very quick.
Senator Sieben? Senator Lilly, are you finished? Go ahead. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, could you, it seems to me that right now, and I'm just, this is just my own observation, no evidence to back this up, that 94 coming, traveling west on 94, the intersection of 94 and 35E often gets backed up during rush hour. So with MinPass, could you just explain the impact that you think that the MinPass lane will have on 94 sure. at that intersection?
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, you are correct. It does back up. The primary reason is the 35E congestion backs into the common section, and we will be relieving that congestion. There's two constraints. The Cayuga Bridge is the key constraint that causes that, and then there's a capacity. There's just too many cars for the capacity of that freeway. So we are expanding 35E. And then relieving that pinch point at Cayuga with that other investment with the Cayuga Bridge. And so I would anticipate that 94 will benefit in the PM peak also because the 35E won't back into the commons section.
Just one follow-up.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will there be a new ramp then from off of 94 to enter onto 35E? Or will that just all be redone with the Cayuga? And
Mr. Chair, Senator, as you enter 35E from 94, it'll be very similar to what it is today. How it aligns, we'll be rebuilding just north of there, the construction starts. So really, as a 94 user going to 35E, it'll look almost the same as it does today.
Any other questions? Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Thompson. So the purpose of MinPass. Let's dig into that a little bit. Financially, the MinPass lanes that are already existing, the two sets of lanes that are already existing, are these profitable to MnDOT? Do these add to the system? How much of the fees go to covering the cost of construction of the corridor, covering those costs? How much of the fees go to policing the corridor? And then how are the profits or excess revenues, if there are such, how are they utilized currently?
Mr. Thompson. Sure.
Senator, yes, so the purpose of our tolling is not it's not revenue. It's not to maximize revenue. So it's to set the price at the point that you maintain a free flow speed. So if there's very few cars in there, the price is very low. Even if somebody was willing to pay more for their travel time, we set it as low as possible. So that's a key difference. Now, in terms of our operating costs, and the operating costs include things like our IT support in the back office, our enforcement with State Patrol, our contracts with our back office operator that provides customer service. Our cost for last year for the two facilities was $2,509,000. You see on the chart here. And then the revenue you see between the two, 35W and 394. The revenue that we use operates under two different statutes currently. For 394, all revenue that we collect there is required to go back to pay back the infrastructure costs to build the MinPass system on 394. On 394, we just added the technology in the back office. We didn't have to build any lanes at that. We are converting, truly converting a carpool lane. And we anticipate that payback will be completed in the next couple of years. On 35W, we did a lot of investment on 35W to allow for a MinPass and the other infrastructure. For instance, the Crosstown Commons project was a several hundred million dollar project that rebuilt that interchange and added the MinPass lane within it. So the statute that governs the 35W does not require the toll revenue to be used to pay back the investment that was made in the corridor. But both of them, after that 394 is paid back, excess revenues go currently to a split between MnDOT to make investments in the corridors where the tolls came from, and to the Met Council for transit investment within the corridors that the toll revenues came from.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Thompson, these toll lanes do not provide significant excess revenue to support the system. Basically, what they are doing is they're just offsetting the cost of implementing the system into the corridor. Would that be a fair statement?
Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is the current statement, yep, our plan. But if the network were to build, your revenue increases at a faster rate than your cost. Because, for instance, our back office customer service, when we added 35W, we didn't expand the number of customer service agents or the number of IT staff. We were able to keep that whole, so you can add corridors and add revenue from those corridors at a faster rate than your cost increase. However, transportation investments that are expansion are expensive, and the toll revenue will never recover what it costs to expand a lane on an urban freeway in the Twin Cities. And that is not the intent of the MnPass system.
Senator Lilly.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To take off on just a clarifying question from Senator Lilly, Mr. Thompson, does any money at all from MnPass go into asphalt or into actual lane construction or maintenance, or is it more for the operation of the electronics, the systems, the back office?
Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, Senator, currently it has to go first to operations. Where we're not it's complicated because in one section we're paying back the investment that we made, the infrastructure investment to build it, which was signs, fiber optics, technology, more than asphalt. And then after that's paid off, it's first you pay for your operation, and then the investment goes back into the MnPass system. The MnPass system is signs technology. It's maintaining the striping. It's maintaining the pavement. It's all that to maintain. It can be used as eligible for the MnPass portion of the system. So but generally, you know, when you do a paving project, you repave the entire stretch of the freeway. One of that lane is MnPass, and so it's an eligible expense, I would say, after these operations expenses are paid. But we haven't got there yet. But.
Senator Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When do you expect that, or do you ever expect that it'll get there, or is the answer probably not?
Well, we currently are taking in more revenue than operating cost, and then but a bulk of that we do have to finish paying off the 394 expenses, and so then it increases again, and so we haven't projected out how we'll distribute that. The payments on 35W are all new. 394 payments are fairly new and in good condition. When we rebuild 35E, it'll be all new payments, and so these are long-lasting payments that should not need investment for a very long term. Striping and signing has a shorter life cycle. Technology does too. And so those would be the first type of things that would have replacement costs that MnPass revenue could go to.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking on your testifiers list to see if we would be hearing from the Met Council at all. Doesn't look like it. Mr. Thompson, just wanted to explore a little bit of the transit aspect. Do you have any similar metrics for the impact of transit use and the satisfaction among customers of those who use transit in these corridors?
Sure.
You mentioned in the presentation shows that a component of this is to allow for free flow for the buses along those corridors. So do we have anything that gives us an indication of what the effect has been on transit?
Mr. Chair, Senator, there's a couple different components there. We poll the transit operators and customers, and they are very satisfied with their transit ride within a MnPass corridor because it is traveling at free flow speed. From an efficiency standpoint, our congested corridors really for transit have two options. They have a MnPass option for a couple of our corridors, and then on the rest of our network, we have bus shoulders. generally. And so in a bus shoulder environment, buses cannot travel faster than 35 miles an hour, and generally they can only travel a little bit faster than the congested traffic. And so in those corridors, your transit trips are longer than if it was a MinPass corridor. That means that same bus can make fewer trips in the peak period, so you have less service from the same operating costs of the buses. And also we found it, the last time I believe we studied transit ridership in MinPass versus other corridors, transit ridership growth was higher, increasing at a higher percentage in MinPass corridors than the region as a whole. So it appears to be a system that attracts transit riders. But we do measure on a quarterly basis transit ridership, throughput, because it's key. How many people are we moving in the lane is what we're trying to do. And from all and then because of this, also the MinPass system, the efficiency of buses traveling and being able to make an extra trip or two because they're traveling faster, they have the higher fare box recovery. And as I mentioned, like Lakeville, the Lakeville transit coming out of the Lakeville station, which was a UPA investment, has that 70% fare box recovery. So there's a series of measures that we look at, MMAC Council looks at, that are clear indicators that is a good transit investment also.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you touched on it a little bit, but you also kind of qualified that we're not going to ever solve congestion. But there has been some discussion in the past. I can't remember. I came in late, so you might have touched on it already. But is there any discussion about the effect of the MinPass lanes on the general purpose lanes, both from cars, you know, automobile drivers, single occupants who opt to drive in the MinPass lanes, as well as from the additional transit use?
Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we've in each of our MinPass study or corridors, we've done extensive evaluation. On 394, the overall number of cars traveling on the general purpose lanes increased after MinPass. We also saw every year from the opening in 2005, the crashes went down in the corridor, and they went down the year from the year next year and years because we were reducing overall congestion, so that benefited the general purpose and getting more people through in the general purpose lane. The 35W study is currently underway. We made a series of investments in 35W that clearly reduced congestion for everybody on that corridor. Because of not just MinPass, but we did expansion. We fixed serious bottlenecks like the Crosstown Commons. So all of those investments are clearly going to lead to more to benefits to the general purpose tremendously on 35W. We just haven't finished that evaluation yet.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I think we will move on to our other testifiers.
Just ask a few questions.
Senator Sharon, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just have a few questions as well. So I'm just generally interested. I came in late, so you may have spoken to this. But in the context for MinPass, when you're determining where to locate a MinPass lane, what is the criteria that you use to identify that this is a good place or a good location for MinPass?
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we had a series of criteria. Number one, it needs to be a congested corridor. You don't need to make a mobility investment if it's not a congested corridor. Many of our freeway corridors in the Twin Cities experience congestion, so that doesn't narrow down the pool too much. We also look at, you know, what is the transit ridership and carpool potential within that corridor, because this is a multimodal investment. Some corridors just don't have the transit investment or ridership potential, so they maybe don't rank as high. And then we also are always trying to coordinate our investments to make the disruption of construction as little as possible, and also, you know, to optimize your investment when you're doing a paving project. That's a good time to add your expansion project because it's a more efficient. You should be able to reduce your overall cost and also reduce your overall disruption. So that's another key factor that went into the component. And we studied every corridor in the Twin Cities and then ranked them based on those series of factors, and that's where 35E came as the top-ranked one relative to that.
Thank you.
Senator Sharon?
Is it, in terms of the process of determining how to expend the resources at MnDOT for transportation corridors, am I to assume from this that the place that you're considering lane expansion is only in relationship to resolution of congestion.
Mr. Thompson?
Well, in the Twin Cities region, we want, if there is no congestion, I guess the current capacity is dealing with it. It wouldn't be a wise investment, considering all the other places where expansion may be more justified to make that need.
I can see my question wasn't very clear. I'm talking about your over. I know you're talking about the metro area, but I'm talking about the overall 20-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
And
for the state.
For the state. And what it is when you're making a recommendation, you have a series of key strategies in the state's regional long-range 20-year transportation plan,
mm-hmm.
one of which is MinPass. But there's also low-cost, high-benefit solutions and multimodal investments. So I'm trying to determine whether that assumed in what you're talking about is that the place for lane expansion, where the 20-year plan is going to make a recommendation of expending dollars for lane expansion, is congestion the only place where the state is seeing lane expansion is appropriate?
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, this I probably should have clarified. These are the strategies that came out of the Metro Regional Plan, 20-year plan. You might have different criteria in a rural highway to look at expansion or other options. From clearly, safety would be a different driver on a rural two-lane highway than it would be on a freeway, because you have much more serious crashes. You have potential for head-on collisions that don't generally exist in a freeway environment. And so expansion, whether or not you would do it, and what options you'd have instead of expansion are much different outside of the freeway network in the Twin Cities. So there's different options available there. And this slide in this context was related to the 20-year plan for the metro region.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thompson, I don't see, I'm just looking on the testifiers here, I don't see DPS on here, but I was just wondering if you could ask me about the number of violations on MinPass and what the cost of enforcement is there versus the fines that are generated. And then also the second question would be on the, you know, you have a very high approval rating from customers. I'm wondering if MnDOT has done anything with non-customers because they are also paying for that lane. What's the feeling of the general public with that? So if you could just respond to those two questions.
Mr. Thompson?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator, on the enforcement standpoint, the way enforcement works is MnDOT contracts with State Patrol to provide enforcement on both corridors. I don't have the enforcement number cost with us, but I can provide that to you. And what they do is they are enforcing whether or not there's occupancy or if you've paid a toll. The fine structure depends on the location you're in. It varies a little bit different by county. And so we have the counties, you're violating the high occupancy vehicle statute, but the actual fine is a little different based in the county. If that's the ticket they're giving you, sometimes they issue different tickets, speeding or distracted driving or something. So it depends on the individual what they were ticketed for, and then whether or not if they went to court and how much they paid. But in general, I believe it averages between the Hennepin and Dakota counties, which these systems are in. I think it's around $150 for a fine, but it could vary a little bit. It does change on an annual basis. It's not something set by MnDOT.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up. Mr. Chair, thank you. Just to follow up on that, so the cost of enforcement is included in the $2.5 million of operations.
Correct.
Do you have like a percentage of what it
is our enforcement cost
on the enforcement part?
Mr. Thompson?
The enforcement cost for last year? Mr. Chair, Senator, it was about $450,000 for the entire system last year for the enforcement costs with State Patrol.
It's about 20%.
It's a complicated system to enforce because it's one you have to rely on troopers to be in the field. It's not something we can enforce through technology.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Rest, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do. I can assure you Senator Howell, those of us who are MenPass customers, particularly on 394, we have very broad smiles on our face when we zip past the cars, sometimes the trucks that are using MenPass inappropriately, and there's a state trooper there, and we've just paid 50 cents, and they're going to pay $150. I mean, it's a wonderful, brightening morning feeling. My question, however, you mentioned that this particular corridor is now has risen to number one in congestion for the mitigation through a MenPass lane. I wonder where other possible corridors are in your ranking, and maybe you've mentioned that, but I'm particularly interested if there are those in the West Metro. So maybe you covered that, but I also was tardy.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I didn't cover the ranking. This map is the corridors that are the high priority corridors. After the yellow ones would be the kind of the next tier of ones that would be through our system study that rose to the top as priority. They are not the next one after 35E is not pegged necessarily. Isn't there's a lot one several of these could be the next one, and so on the West Metro. 94 from the 694, 494 out to the west is one. 494 is one along the entire beltway from the northwest all the way to the airport. Is different segments within that are a high priority, particularly the Bloomington Strip. We currently have a detailed engineering studies going on 35W from downtown to the north. We're looking at 94 between the commons, between the two downtowns from an engineering standpoint. There, all of these corridors have their challenges that until you get through another stage, you can't really see maybe which one is the next one after 35E.
So, Mr. Chairman, so there is no number two at the present time.
All right. What we said is this is the second tier or the next tier of potential candidates after 35E.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Hall.
Just one quick follow-up. I didn't get the answer on what the general public feels of, as far as approval rating. And back to Senator Rest's point, yeah, I agree with that. I'm just wondering, you know, just doing the simple math to pay for the enforcement, you need to issue 3,000 tickets. And I'm just wondering how many tickets are issued there. I mean, to make a logical investment in that level of enforcement. So I'd like to know how many fines we issue on an annual basis.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's actually on the first customer, we've polled the customers on 394 that are not MenPass users. That are not.
Okay.
It probably hasn't been too recent, but after we opened it, we did several annual polls, and they were very satisfied because their trip was better, too.
Sure, okay.
And 35W's surveys are underway. They'll be completed by, I think, the end of this year as part of our comprehensive evaluation for 35W, and that's MenPass and non-MenPass customers. So we'd have an answer in the future for that.
I'll find something.
In terms of the enforcement question, it's actually more complicated than simple math of how many tickets did you write versus the cost, because one of the key enforcement, the violation rate is tied to enforcement. So a presence of enforcement dramatically reduces the violation rate on MenPass, and they're not necessarily using the general purpose lane. They're paying customers. So there's a relation between your investment enforcement and the toll revenue also that is not something I would be able to figure that out. But we can probably get back to you about the number of fines. I believe that's information. I don't know how easily it is available to us, but we could do some digging into because that's run through the court system, the county level court system. It's not something MnDOT tracks the number of fines that are paid. So we'd have to get back to you. But it's a more complicated because it's toll your enforcement investments are related to how many people pay tolls and what they paid, when they paid, and your customer levels. So it's what we do know is that when you put a MenPass system on what was a carpool lane, the people that were violating the carpool lane become MenPass customers. Mm-hmm. And that's part of your enforcement strategy.
Senator Rust.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Howell, also keep in mind, in terms of customer satisfaction, that there are indeed carpools on the HOV lanes, and certainly when I have a passenger in my car, I take my transponder down. I don't have to pay, and there are people who use the so-called MenPass lanes for as an HOV lane routinely because they have someone else in the car with them. So when you talk about customers, it's not necessarily just those single occupant cars who are expressing satisfaction. I mean, the HOV users are not saying that they resent the or that they that their trip is any less successful because they're sharing it with the single occupant vehicle as well. So you know, keep in mind, and I'm assuming that the MenPass lane on 35E will operate in the same way as an HOV lane. So the reduction and the incentives for reducing congestion are not merely for the single occupancy vehicles, but also encouraging carpooling or vanpooling or what else, whatever else, as a means of keeping the traffic flowing in the general purpose lanes, which, as you've indicated, is the major mission of dynamic pricing on lanes like MenPass.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I also would highlight that the MenPass lane is open to general use on non-peak times. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator, the correct. This is a peak period. There's a demand in the peak period. That's what MenPass is for, is to provide a trip in that, you know, an off-peak. If you look at our freeway network at 10:30 this morning, there is no congestion out there. And so there's no need to price that to provide a reliable trip.
Thank you very much. And I understand.
Mr. Chairman, if you will, on that point, I'm sorry, Senator Sharon, except you may not be a MenPass single occupant customer on 394 on the dedicated lanes. There's no time when that is open to general traffic like the dedicated lane, the barricaded lane. You can't use that as a no priced lane at any point.
I should also clarify, there's a segment on 35W, the shoulder lane, that we open up the shoulder and allow people, MenPass users, to use it. Whenever that shoulder is open, is the same case. By statute, whenever the shoulder is open to traffic, it has to be priced. But the shoulder isn't open 24 hours a day. It's usually in the peak periods that we open that shoulder when there's demand. But it's not necessarily – it varies because of congestion varies around that section.
Thank you.
Senator Sharp.
If I may continue. I understand your title here is Minnesota Policy, Safety, and Strategic Initiative Division Director. Is that correct?
Correct.
So, and you're talking specifically about Metro Area Plan here. Are you also presenting tomorrow? Will you be here tomorrow for the presentation?
Is that the quarter investment management strategy?
Yes.
I will not be there, but MnDOT representatives will be that are involved in that.
Because it strikes me that the expansion of lanes, which is what we're talking about here, also reduces crashes. You're indicating that there is increased safety, and there nobody's really talked about, although you're talking about whether or not the MenPass dollars support the investment. Is certainly you're not calculating in that the gain that comes, the economic gain that comes from reduced congestion or the reduction of safety. There's other secondary economic benefits from creating a lane expansion.
Mr. Thomas.
Sure. Senator, there are a lot of benefits provided by the system when you're expanding this in a congested corridor. You're providing reliable freight travel. You're definitely reducing crashes. Now, you know, this investment, crashes on an interstate in a congested time are different than crashes at intersections and things like that. So it's an investment that targets a certain type of crash, which is rear-end collisions and congestion, and it clearly, which is the predominant type of crash in a congested, in an urban freeway. And so it definitely reduces those. But those are crashes that can be life-altering also and cause injuries and clearly economic loss for anybody involved in a crash.
And thank you. I'm asking this in context of the 20-year plan throughout the state because I'll be interested to hear the arguments against lane expansion. We're not talking about the metropolitan area. So I'm just trying to make the point that the criteria for lane expansion may need to be looked at differently in the rural area, but is nevertheless equivalently important, and that we cannot approach the 20-year plan assuming that some increased educational program about seat belts or an educational program that gets people off their cell phones somehow will resolve the serious nature of the two-lane roads in the rural part of the state. So I look forward to hearing this same justification system tomorrow during our discussion of two-lane roads in the rural state.
Good. Thank you, Senator Sharon. Any other comments?
One quick question.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Peterson, so when we look at this map that is up in front of us currently, you mentioned that you were not able to identify which would be the next one following the 35E corridor, but what is the time frame under which MnDOT would like to see that system of toll lanes implemented in the Twin Cities?
Mr. Thompson?
Chair, Senator, the time frame is dictated by the funding available to do investments to target mobility within the next 10 years. You know, the current with the needs in pavements and bridges and safety, there is not currently funding to build this system in the next 10 years. There's at most likely there's an opportunity for another corridor within what we know now, given the planning horizon. But these are all corridors that are congested today, and the commuters and customers and businesses and freight movers probably would like to see investments made from a mobility standpoint much sooner than that time frame.
And just so the committee and others know, the original proposal on the part of MnDOT was to have complete authority over the entire metro area, but we've, as a committee and as the having jurisdiction over this, we want to take this one corridor at a time. So as those corridors come up and the opportunities arise, we'll hear about them here in the committee and have similar discussions in the future, I'm sure. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thompson, can you tell me how many FTEs do we have for the complete operation, whether it's State Patrol or MnDOT, for the operations? And would expanding, how many more additional FTEs would it require or for ongoing, or would it just be added to the current system and there wouldn't be any more FTEs added to that?
Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'll break it down into a couple different categories. Enforcement-wise, on 394, we have one officer average per peak period, so two peaks per day, okay. 5 days a week, and those are 3 to 4 hour shifts. Of course, it's not the same person. They run it coordinated with their overall State Patrol unit. 35W, because it's longer, in some peaks we have two officers out there operating.
Mr. Chair.
So from an FTE standpoint, it's equivalent probably to three officers, but it's for enforcement side of that.
Right. I don't need it broken down on enforcement side. Just the total FTEs, FTEs to run the MnPass operations for the government operations of it, and then adding this piece, would that add any more FTEs, or are we going to run it with the same amount of FTEs that we have now?
Sure.
Mr. Thompson.
We have one person within MnDOT dedicated to MnPass. Okay. And then we have one that does the kind of the planning side of it. So that's the only full-time FTE for MnPass. All the customer service is operated under contract with a firm. And we anticipate, we haven't planned with the next corridor, but we probably would keep the same level of staffing to add that because we can expand a corridor with the same back office system. And then the enforcement, as I mentioned. So it's as the network expands, these are road projects, so we have designers that work on the overall design at certain components. As within their current work to put a plan out for bid for construction. We have we are constructing a system, so we have resident engineers and inspectors that are out with these facilities as they're being built. So these are traditional road projects in that sense. So every component phase of planning, design, construction, those phases all have staff dedicated to them to build the expansion of the expansion project. So I don't know if that gets exactly to where your answer is or if you'd like a different detail to it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think maybe just get back to me with the total number of FTEs to run the operation. I mean, usually sure. When we do something, we have that somewhere.
From the overall, from our consultant and our patrol and MnDOT, we can provide that.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Thompson, thank you. Very good discussion this morning about the workings of the MnPass system. And now I'd like to have us move on to our testifiers in support and in opposition of this. And I think what we'll do is call up three at a time. We have Shirley Yabara. I hope I pronounced that correctly. If not, you can correct me. And then Mr. Jurdis and Mr. Terwilliger. Senator Terwilliger, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the records as you give your testimony.
I am Shirley Yabara. I happen to say Yabara, but, you know, whatever. And I'm a senior transportation analyst with the Reason Foundation. The Reason Foundation was founded about 50 years ago, close to 50 years ago now, on transportation, dealing with transportation issues. Our motto is free markets and free minds. And we take no government money from the state or the feds or anything. We are supported by individuals and businesses, and there's a magazine that we have and so on. For my background, very quickly, I worked for Elizabeth Dole when she was Secretary of Transportation in the Reagan administration. I was her senior policy advisor and dealt with getting National and Dulles. And if any of you flew into National and Dulles early before 85, say, those are pretty dismal airports, and we got them out of the federal government and into the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority. And that took about 4 years of my life to get that move through Congress and to get that up and running. And I think we have really beautiful airports there now. I'll skip over some of the other mucky details, but I also became, in the 1990s, I was Deputy Secretary of Transportation for the Commonwealth of Virginia under George Allen. And then, and you don't get promoted, you got to go for the jobs as a political appointee. I became Secretary of Transportation under Governor Jim Gilmore. And I have some experience, of running an agency or two. I had six agencies underneath me in Virginia. And a highway agency was, of course, the largest. Let me just talk, and at the Reason Foundation, frankly, the whole idea of express lanes, or sometimes you hear them called hot lanes, high occupancy toll lanes, hot lanes, frankly, was invented in the 1993 publication by the Reason Foundation. And what Bob Poole, the founder of the Reason Foundation, was doing was looking at a way to solve what was becoming a congestion problem. And we have followed this. We've written about it. I've written about the various express lanes, hot lanes, MnPass, you can kind of name it anything. But it is a way to solve congestion. What we found is we don't have a way to just kind of expand everything and add lanes. One, the right-of-way right now is too expensive to do that. And we've got to find ways to use what we've got, or at least the right-of-way, more efficiently. And certainly these express lanes and being able, it does two things. It helps manage the congestion, And it also helps us find a way, and in some places they actually use the express lanes and the tolling at much higher rates than you pay in Minnesota to pay for the lanes. We're also finding that the enormous advantage for the transit users, as we are able to add transit, and what we need is reliable transit. And the best example of that is the first one would be the new lanes in Florida on I-95. The second one will be the high occupancy toll lanes that are being constructed on the Beltway near Washington, D.C. And if you've ever been around the Beltway, you know, I mean, you can't move sort of any time during the day. They're adding two lanes in each direction, and it will be very impressive. For the first time, we are seeing the proposed schedules for buses to be able to use the express lanes because no one could secure or guarantee a reliable time. We all know that there's not enough money, that the value of what we're getting in taxes has gone down and down as people, A, are driving less. We got a lot more of the fuel-efficient cars, and so we just don't have the money to go, you know, build everything we want. But what we found as we've watched the high-occupancy lanes or the express lanes, the MinPass-type lanes, and we found them all over the country, is that we've got not only the advantage in the toll lanes of the guaranteed time. I mean, think of it as a congestion insurance. In other words, if you have to go pick up your children at the daycare center because you have your choice of paying, you know, whether it's 25 cents or $1.50 or whatever the charges are for that location, you either have that choice or how much is it when you're late at the daycare center? And some of those charges are quite expensive. So, or if you missed a flight, you got to get to the airport. So these are, think of it as when to handle congestion, think of it as, and you were saying it before, Senator, I mean, it's an insurance policy. And that's really what you're trying to do in solving the congestion. The other thing we've seen all over the country is not only, and all over the country, I mean, it's Texas, it's California, it's Washington State, it's Florida. We've seen these lanes being put into effect. And what we see is not only is the congestion insurance, if you will, on moving very well in the toll lanes, but we find that the other people that benefit are the people that are operating in the general purpose lanes, the free lanes. In other words, that option clears up both the general purpose lanes as well as the as those that have taken the option, and some pay the fees to do it. One of the things that, and the most recent thing, and if you need copies of this, I'll get it. It's certainly on our website. It was called The Most for Our Money, and we looked at, and this is combined, this is Reason, Taxpayers for Common Sense, and the National National Resources Defense Council, Transportation for America. In it, one of the, we picked five things that we could point to as being good for the taxpayers because it provided some opportunities. And one of the things in here, and it's number two, is the high occupancy, what would be called the MinPass lanes here. And in here is a map of where these things are being used all around the country and talks about sort of some of the things that I've talked about here. And with that, I know you want to hold things down.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony, and if you would leave a copy of that with my committee administrator, we'll have it available for the committee members.
Thank you.
And
be happy to
the information. Mr. Gerdes.
Hello. my name is Randy Gerdes, president of SRF Consulting Group. We are a member of the American Council of Engineering Companies here in Minnesota, ACEC Minnesota, and as such, we're very supportive of a healthy multimodal transportation system, not only in the regional area here, but also statewide. As an engineer, I want to be very brief here and very supportive of the testimony that you've heard already here this morning. I've been a transportation engineer here in the Twin Cities for 35 years, and when I first came out of school, our solution to these problems was build as many multi-use lanes as you possibly can and create all the capacity that you possibly can and eliminate all the congestion. In the 35 years that I've been in business, obviously we've come to the conclusion that it's virtually impossible to do so, not only from a financial standpoint, but also because of the large footprint that the highways have on the general public and on the right-of-way and the impacts that go along with that and the environmental and clearances and documentation that are necessary to get those done. So obviously this is not the solution. I've been fortunate, and our firm has been fortunate, to have been involved on the 394 corridor from the very beginning, going all the way back to the original legislation that occurred that basically dictated the width of the corridor, particularly in that stretch between St. Louis Park and Golden Valley, where MnDOT was given a width to work with and said, do what you can within this width, out of which was born the tool that was being also used in other parts of the country at that time. It was called the HOV lane, where we can't get enough lanes in there, but if we can get a higher density of or a higher ridership in one of the lanes, we can move more people. That was very successful. We originally designed an interim HOV lane during the construction of 394 so that we could get people acclimated to it. And we also sold that with the destination in mind in downtown Minneapolis of the three parking garages that are down there. So it was a package deal. Ultimately, that HOV lane, as you know, was converted to a hot lane as part of the original MnPass system, and we assisted in selling that and educating the public into how that can all operate successfully, not only for the users that are in the HOV and HLT lane, but also in the other lanes as well. That was testified to earlier this morning. As an engineer, we are challenged all the time to do more with less, and the more is getting more of a return on your investment, and of course the less is less investment, less revenue, less money to deal with. The whole concept of the MnPass system and the hot lane concept is extremely important to being able to do more with less, and I cannot encourage you enough to be very supportive of using this tool in the toolbox on this particular corridor at this point in time. You've got a convergence of some revenue streams. You've got a convergence of opportunity that was testified to earlier where you can do one project one time, get it all done, get in and get out. The alternative is to go in there and do this and do that and spread it out over several years, is possibly 5 to 10 years. That is not efficient, is more disruptive to the public. You've got a wonderful opportunity here. You have an innovative solution. It's the right thing to do at the right time. I would end by saying that on the way over here this morning, I did use the I-394 hot lane. It saved me at least 20 to 25 minutes on my trip. As a business person, I use it all the time in getting around the Twin Cities area. It is vital to a higher efficiency, less delays, more bang for the buck. There's no question about it. I would, and ACEC would request your support of MnDOT's initiative here to implement MnPass on 35E corridor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes. Mr. Twilliger. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's nice to be back. I, as King Henry the Eighth said to each of his six wives, "Don't worry, I won't keep you long." I realized when I was looking at the list of the committee makeup that only one committee member here was here when I was here. It's how quickly 10 years flies by, and I'm here as a former member of the Center for Transportation Studies, as a former member of the Transportation Committee, as a former member of a couple of task forces out of the Humphrey Institute, where we looked at things such as congestion, pricing, and et cetera. And I'm also a MinPass user. And perhaps to Senator Rest's point, just expand on that for a second, I guess I'd consider myself both a user as well as a non-user member of the public, because I tend to flip in and out. For 8 years after I left this body, I chaired the Sports Facilities Commission, which brought me back over here frequently, as well as downtown very frequently, always through that corridor of the crosstown, 394 or 35W. And it was a godsend, frankly, to have this. I preceded MinPass and the reconstruction of the crosstown intersection with 35W, et cetera. But I preceded that, and in the car and coming back and forth to here as well as downtown, was constantly in a battle for time, because as a suburban senator, as you, I think most of you realize, you tend to get called back to the district many times during the day. So as I saw the evolution of MinPass as it came in the construction, et cetera, and the assistance it gave me to control my schedule and get to meetings and get back and forth, I used MinPass when I need to, or not use it, depending upon where I'm at. It's a voluntary type of a thing where I can make that determination. And I assure you that it really is a very real assist, at least in my planning. And so I think that 90% approval that you see on the MinPass users, it would be a very high approval rating also for the non-users. So I would encourage you to be positive about this. I would submit that with the pressure for dollars right now, we know we take about every dollar that we get right now just to maintain the current system, transportation system, and there's constant pressure, you know, for the dollar. And so this, I think, is a good bang for the buck, so to speak. I think it's been well administered. It's very simple, even for someone like me who's non-techie, to be able to even work it back and forth and to keep my account current. And so I think it's a program that has been met with great success. I think it will continue to do so as it's expanded, and will assist in controlling congestion. And so, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to make just a brief statement, and thank you for the time, and nice to see you.
Thank you, and appreciate you being here. Next up, we have Mr. Hovland, Ms. Reinhardt, and Mr. Sandberg.
Who wants to start first?
We can go sequentially. I'll go first.
All right.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Jim Hovland. I'm the mayor of Edina. I'm also co-chair of the Regional Council of Mayors. In 2005, I was asked to participate along with Senator Rest and about two dozen other people in a study of a potential MinPass system. Yep. Senator Dibble as well, then Representative Earhart, as I recall. In a study of whether or not it made sense to look at a system of MinPass throughout the metro area. Since then, I think the work that we did at that point in time has has been validated in the sense that when within the last 2 years, MnDOT, I believe, has looked at in a perfect world, if we could build out all the road and bridge projects that we need to do, what would it cost? I think the number was $65 billion. Well, what do we have coming in over the next 20 years? $15 billion. So that delta kind of says it all. We're just not going to have the money that we need to do the things that we wish we could do. So in that constrained budgetary world, where does MnPass fit in? Well, it's in 2005, when we undertook that study, that was the same year they opened up the 394 MnPass lane, and I think it's been a great success. It's paid for itself operationally and then some. Since then, you remember back after the bridge collapse, we got a $133 million grant from the federal government for the Urban Partnership Agreement. This legislative body matched that with another $55 million, and we were able to put in place the 35W MnPass lane. Bob Tennyson tells me now, who represents the 35W Solutions Alliance, that it's kicking off about $150,000 a year in profit that's used to help support the transit operations down there. So I think that this is just the reality of the day, that we need to think about how to make sure that people can move in a reliable sort of way. How can you get that better predictability from a mobility standpoint? How can you reduce congestion? On 394, there's 150,000 vehicles a day using that system. 80% of the people using these systems, both on 394 and 35W, are transit users. And, of course, you know you've got a 90% satisfaction rate. So most of the people that are taking the bus or going in a carpool are supporting this system tremendously. And even the people who are using the general purpose lanes, 60% of those folks are in favor of the MnPass system as well. So I think as we move forward, we face this constrained budgetary world, trying to do more with less, getting, as former Senator Terwilliger said, the best bang for the buck. This is the thing that we need to be thinking about, and I would urge that we look at this on 35E. It's an $80 to $100 million investment that MnDOT can make out of its own budget. They're not here asking you for any additional assistance in these difficult times. If it doesn't get spent there, it's going to move on to somewhere like 35W North or 36. I think this is the most congested point that we have based on their analysis. I believe now when I look back that they were quite prescient in 65 or in 2005 when they asked us, many of us, to look at this system and whether it made any sense. And I would support their testimony here and ask that you pass legislation that allows them to build out this system on 35E. Thank you.
Members, any questions for Mayor Hovland? Commissioner?
Thank you. My name is Victoria Reinhart. I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner, and I'm also chair of the Rushline Corridor Task Force. Clearly, this particular project is contained all within Ramsey County, and in both cases, both at the Rushline Corridor and at the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, we had a lengthy and lively discussion about MnPass because there's no easy answers, and there are a lot of concerns that are raised. I will quickly go through what we feel are the benefits, but I'm also going to talk a little bit about some of the concerns that were raised, many of which you also raised here. MnPass offers another tool to stretch the limited transportation funds and enhance mobility options. This is about transit. This is about investment in the East Metro. It offers faster and more reliable transit service. It's operations encourage ride sharing and carpooling because you can participate in this without having to pay. The MnPass lane capacity can help reduce overall congestion levels and improve highway travel speeds. And this is important whether you are utilizing the MnPass lane itself or you are in the other lanes. It operates generates revenue, which may help to support further transportation improvements, and that's one that I will come back to, and also requires many improvements to the structures and related transportation features, which was very important to Ramsey County and to the Rushline Corridor. But we also feel that it's important not to undermine the existing uses, such as pedestrian and the bike paths. Rush Line itself is 22 members. It includes the counties of Anoka, Ramsey, Washington, Pine, and Chisago. And, of course, the county board has 7 members. In both cases, this was the support for MNPAS on 35E was passed unanimously. I said that there was lengthy and lively discussion, and part of that was dealing with concerns about the excess revenue. The investment in the East Metro and this project is being treated differently, where the investments, it's our understanding anyhow, that the any excess revenue, which isn't a lot, but any excess revenue will go back into the general fund rather than be reinvested in transit in any way, much less into the corridor itself. That's none of these things, by the way, the concerns that were raised were diminished the support for the overall concept and trying to get this done in the East Metro. But that was, you know, we really do believe that we shouldn't be treated differently, that any excess revenue should go back into the corridor. This is, as far as the East Metro, this is the first time when you're looking at what are the investments, this is the first time that there's going to be this type of corridor or the MNPAS lane in the East Metro. And we are very committed to a multimodal regional system. And if you have multimodal regional system, you have to include the East Metro. And so this is something that is very important to the East Metro, just as far as starting to get that investment in the area. The concern here was that if this were done, that somehow the legislature would feel that the entire East Metro was dealt with and that that's all you had to do was a MNPAS lane. I'm here to tell you that that's not the case. This is part of a multimodal regional system. And I also already mentioned the making sure that the other investments that are already in this corridor, such as pedestrian and bike paths, and that investment really needs to be maintained or improved and enhanced. The issue of the access and having to pay to be in this lane was also brought up. Does it create something that is the have and have-nots? After lengthy discussion on that, we said, no, it really does not, because it's voluntary. You can use it or not. And whether you use it or not, if you are on that road, which I travel many times often in a day because of my schedule as well, I happen to live in White Bear Lake, you're going to benefit whether you're using that lane or not, because you're going to be able to have somebody that's in that lane is not in my lane. If I'm not paying for it. And so it really wasn't an issue of have and have-nots, but rather it benefits all. And then finally, the investments, as I mentioned, are very important, and it is going to improve the entire system, not just for MNPAS, but this is part of a bigger project, and getting all of that infrastructure in place is important. It can be used by all during non-peak times. That was also a very important aspect for our county board and for Rush Line. Again, it passed unanimously from Rush Line and the county board, and it was pointed out at both bodies that a unanimous support for something like this, when you're talking about some of the controversies that are part of it, is very, very important. So we really hope that you will pass this.
Thank you. And next up, we have Mr. Sandberg.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for your time this morning. My name is Wayne Sandberg. I'm the Washington County Engineer, and I'm here on behalf of County Commissioner Dennis Hagberg, who's also the Washington County Board Chair. He's unable to be here today because the county board meeting is occurring right now, and as chair, he's running that meeting. So what I'd like to do is just read Commissioner Hagberg's testimony for you on his behalf. On February 21st, 2012, the Washington County Board received an update from the Minnesota Department of Transportation on their MNPAS plans as part of the I-35E reconstruction project. On March 20th of this year, the County Board approved a resolution of support for the MNPAS system implementation metro-wide. Also, after that discussion at the Rush Line Corridor Task Force meeting, which Commissioner Hagberg serves as the vice chair, he did vote to support the MNPAS project on I-35E. Key strategies of the MidPass system includes low-cost, high-benefit solutions and multimodal investments. Through the implementation of this system, it will increase vehicle and truck capacity along the I-35E corridor, which is extremely important for Washington County. It will improve bus transit operations and reliability, and it will provide the public with faster and more reliable travel choices for the future. Again, all these things benefit the residents and the business community of Washington County. Additionally, Commissioner Hagberg prefers that any excess funds collected through the MinPass system lanes be reinvested in the corridor. Please consider supporting this MinPass project as part of the I-35E project reconstruction. These investments now are a wise choice for the long-range viability of the corridor and create opportunities for alternative choices for transportation. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you for your testimony. And a number of you have said reinvest the money back into the corridor, and I just call committee members' attention to page 2, line 2.23, and going through to 2.25. That's what we are attempting to do here and what would be a part of this particular bill. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate you being here. Next up, we have Mr. Clausen, Mr. Schwartz, and Mr. Tennyson.
Mr. Chairman, which lines did you say
maybe I'm not
covered the reinvestment in the corridor?
Two, 2.23 to 2.25, is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stephen.
It actually looks like the money just has to go back into the MinPass system, but not into that corridor.
There is language. That's correct. Is that?
But maybe it's somewhere else.
You'll notice on 2.14 and 2.15, we've stricken the separate account language, and for each of the corridors, what will happen is all of the money will go into one account to be used for the operation and maintenance of the corridors themselves. And there was also a concern
rather
that
than just floating into the ether.
There was a comment also made about money going into the general fund.
That's not the
case. That's not going to happen under this. But also, we'll let our testifiers go. I just wanted to have some clarification on that point. Whoever would like to proceed first.
Good morning. Good morning. Mike Klassen, Department of Transportation Planning, Public Works, City of St. Paul. And good morning, Chair Ginsey, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak on behalf of the MinPass project today. I want to say the city and Ramsey County partnered with our partners at MnDOT way back in the mid-90s to start to get this 35E corridor improvements moving along. And we're really looking forward and happy that the 35EKU project is moving forward, and hopefully that MinPass can be a part of it and added to the project and extended out. 35E is a very vital corridor, not surprisingly, for East Metro and especially for the city of St. Paul. Over a third of downtown St. Paul workforce uses the corridor every workday to get to and from work. Over 60%, some of you were around, I think, when the City of St. Paul was working with MnDOT and the legislature to get Phelan Corridor built along the east side. And over 60% of the vehicles that workforce along Phelan Corridor are using 35E. Today, just currently, I don't know if anybody mentioned it, but there's about 150,000 cars a day using 35E for the corridor. 6 hours of reoccurring congestion daily. And as mentioned earlier, it's one of the highest peak hour accident rate corridors. So we're really looking forward to the needed access and safety improvements that the 35E Cayuga project will give. But we also hope that the MinPass project can be approved and added to extend the project and expand the benefits of the corridor and the work of the Cayuga out into the future. As Nick mentioned earlier, MinPass studies have shown that MinPass provides the highest person throughput along the corridor rather than a general purpose lane. It improves the commuter options for all commuters and especially added benefit to transit and parking rides, which are very important because it helps reduce our parking costs downtown and reduce travel costs for our workforce downtown. The other thing is MinPass improves traffic flow and vehicle flow for all the lanes on the freeway, not just the MinPass lane. And they've been operating successfully in our West Metro, our good friends to the west, since 2005 on 394 and 2009 and 35W. So the point is that I think it's time to get it over to the East Metro. Min Pass is very consistent with St. Paul's Comprehensive Plan, which called for a balanced transportation system. Most importantly, Min Pass has the support of the community, both the district councils on either side of the 35E corridor and the chamber have expressed support in the Min Pass and in our meetings and several meetings that I've been involved with MnDOT and open houses. Min Pass seems to be very favorable and acceptable and looking forward to it. So it seems it's the right time. We can save the money by combining these two projects and get the maximum benefit. And with that, I'd like to just simply say the City of St. Paul would encourage you to support the Min Pass project, and we'll look forward to having them all completed in the very near future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Schwartz.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Zach Schwartz with the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. I'm here today really to repeat a lot of what folks have said, so I'll spare you that and basically highlight why we are supportive of this project. The chamber was approached to reach out to our members to understand what the St. Paul and East Metro business community felt about this potential project for East Metro Min Pass on I-35E. We hosted two open houses in conjunction with MnDOT and their experts on the Min Pass system in order to provide our members with additional information and gather member feedback. Through these open houses and a review of the proposed project, it was found that the Min Pass project was both in line with the Chamber's goals of increasing East Metro transportation investment and adding choices for commuters in St. Paul and the East Metro. One of the most important, which I think was reiterated through many previous testimonies today, was that it provides reliability for employees, goods, services, and customers for businesses in St. Paul and the East Metro. And that reliability is important to the business community in St. Paul. Again, you know, when we consider these types of options as a chamber, we also want to do so with the option or with the concept of doing more with less. We have limited resources to invest in our transportation investments in the East Metro. So we want to make sure that if we are going to add capacity to that, that it's a long-lasting benefit. And so that's another reason why we're supportive. And I think another one that was brought up earlier was that it also increases our vehicle and truck capacity in this corridor, which is a major thoroughfare for the Twin Cities region as a whole. So with that, I think you guys had addressed the concern that Ramsey County and the City of St. Paul had with the reinvestment of revenues for this being in the corridor. So with that, we are supportive of the Min Pass proposal and encourage this committee to move that forward as well.
Thank you. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schwartz, thank you. Thank you for coming today. The narrowing of the lanes to 12 feet, are we concerned about the trucking capacity? We talked about the expansion of trucking. Are you comfortable that the truck lanes will be wide enough to safely move product in those lanes at that width?
Mr. Chair and Senator Lilly, as it was explained earlier in the presentation, the St. Paul Area Chamber was in agreement with MnDOT and their analysis of the expansion of the lanes. They are adding capacity to this lane, and I think the narrowing was narrowing of the shoulder lane. And so, therefore, we believe that it does add capacity to this corridor, and we are supportive of that.
Okay, good.
Okay, Mr. Tenson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Tennyson. I'm attorney in Minneapolis, and I represent the I-35W Solutions Alliance, which is a joint powers board. It's been around since about 1988, and I've had the privilege of representing for about 20 years. It consists of Hennepin County, Scott County, Dakota County, and the cities of Minneapolis, Richfield, Bloomington, Burnsville, Savage, Lakeville, and Elko Newmarket. We support MPAS programs in Minnesota. We have one, and let me give you a little background. In 1982, this legislature passed a bill dealing with bus rapid transit on 35W and Highway 77, Lake Cedar Avenue, and we supported that, and that's in place, and that's where the funding mechanism that's currently in the law was put forth. And we continue to support that. Let me, when we were working on the BRT, the federal government, Secretary Peters, under the Bush administration, came to town and offered a program, which worked pretty well. It was the Urban Partnership Agreement. It brought in a lot of money to Minnesota. Minnesota had to make a commitment to that as well. And Governor Plenty and the legislature at that time did that. And that money was used to further develop the bus rapid transit system and also used for the MPAS system. The bus rapid transit system works better with the MPAS because it has a dedicated lane and so on. That money enabled the reconstruction downtown so traffic could move more quickly in Minneapolis and also for expansion north of 46th Street. Otherwise, we would have had a bottleneck at that point. And so that we do that. But as part of that agreement, we're to put in bus rapid transit on 35W and Cedar Avenue. And the monies that were generated, any excess monies generated on that corridor from the MPAS lane were to be used, split between MnDOT and Metro Council and used for Metro Transit. And for us to be able to use that for transit on, in the 35W corridor, that is buying bus, it could be used to buy buses that are designed more for bus rapid transit. So while we support the bill in terms of the expansion of the MPAS lane, we take exception with the idea of taking the money that was dedicated and part of the agreement we had with MnDOT and Metro Council and also with the federal government that this the funding system for this transit would be used as set forth in statute. That now is generating some profit, I understand, from talking with Metro Council and someone in the neighborhood, Mayor Hovland said. But to take that out and use it other ways sort of goes back on the agreement we had and the understanding we had with regard to the use of that money, and because our work is not completed. And the reason why there's money generated in that route rather than on 394 is because the monies that were used to buy for some of the capital investment came from the urban partnership monies, not from state monies. So we want to see the maintenance of the current division. At some point, these other corridors will also potentially generate a profit. As you heard from Nick Thompson, they expect another year or two, the 394 will kick off some revenues. In an ideal world, you might be right about having one pot of money, but right now we understand we have a sort of a commitment to use that money in our corridor, and this would take it away. Thank you.
Mr. Tennyson, I appreciate your comments, and maybe you could clarify for me, in Finance Committee on another bill, this provision was also moving the authorization for this MnPass lane. I heard the Met Council make the statement that the money was used for bus operations by the Met Council. Can you clarify that for us at all?
No, I don't disagree with that. It is used for bus operations, and it could be used in bus operation in that corridor, but it also could be used to acquire buses for that corridor, as I understand the law. Now, Metro Council has some different knowledge about that. I can testify to that, but that's my understanding.
Mr. Tennyson, though, the what we heard, though, in Finance Committee was that they were currently using it for bus operations by the Met Council.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, that 35W is the most heavily traveled corridor in Minnesota. From Lakeville downtown Minneapolis, just is. The numbers are over 200,000 vehicles a day. It's also one of the heaviest routes for transit. So like 15,000, I don't have current numbers, but last I knew it was around 15,000 riders a day using that corridor for bus rides.
Thank you for your testimony and for your concern. Senator Rust.
To that point, this bill would not permit that. Is that correct?
Senator Rest, this bill would the money would be all allocated to MnDOT for use within the corridors.
And so it would restrict it for, quote, bus operations.
It would be.
I'm fine with that. I just want to make sure that I understand that this bill preempts what's happened in the past, regardless of how the Met Council used the dollars coming to it from MnPass. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stephen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify. Mr. Tennyson, I thought you said that the I just lost my train of thought, that the Urban Partnership Agreement only received federal money, but I thought that we did give a substantial portion of state bonding dollars to that project, too.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, the state did, and I did say that the state put up money for that as well, and I think it was around $50 million, $60 million, to match about $140, $150 million in federal monies.
Right.
I did say that, as I recall, initially.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. And next up, we have Mr. Reinert. Mr. Rosler and Mr. Polvoni. Welcome to the committee, and if you'd identify yourself for the record.
I am Dave Roser, Lionel Lakes City Council member.
Go ahead with your
okay.
testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, senators, and council members here. as I said, I'm a Lionel Lakes city council member. I think we're very impacted by this project because there's another project down the road here at 35W. You'll be seeing something along that if you haven't already. We straddle, both these highways go right through Lionel Lake, so my constituents are very much part of this. They would like to move faster, but they, you know, they think that they're paying enough taxes for the roadways the way they are now, right now. Some of the other costs, some of the other hidden costs that were brought up about enforcement of this, I know that our police officers are also called from time to time to do policing of the highway systems in our town. So there are some costs that aren't included into the MnDOT things. What I'm really concerned about is the evolution here of this tollway system. I grew up in Chicago. I'm old enough to remember that the tollways were just temporary until they could pay off the investment. Well, I go back to Chicago often enough. I have one of these. It's an I-Pass. And I want to tell you that it's not temporary. It's expanded, and it's expanded all over. And what I did was I took a look at what happened here, the recent rates here on the tollway system. And it's quite concerning. In January 1st, the rates went up 90% in Illinois on their tollway system. And this is through the Illinois Department of Transportation, which is not an elected official. So what's happening to a lot of that money is you may be talking today where that money is going to go for the tolls for these lanes. But eventually, looking at history, these lanes are going to expand, and it's going to expand on a whole tollway system. And that's going to cost us and going to continue to go up and up. And I'm going to say this is about the closest thing to highway robbery that we have today. It's very high tech. This can take $2.80 out of my pocket as I'm flying along at 55 miles an hour. Some of these tolls are up to on trucks are up to $7.50, and this is just for a small area. If you try to transgress the entire Chicago area with the toll system in a truck, well, I'm not sure what that would be, but in a car, it's over $10,000 or $10 to get from one end to the other. So I'm very concerned about the evolution here that's starting. That if we start with these toll lanes and we get everybody used to that, and then they're relieved that they don't have to stop and put money into a toll booth anymore, that they're just having the money taken out of their account on a regular basis, and they feel freed up by that. So we're kind of educating people in that regard. What I'm hearing, too, people that are for this seem to be groups that are more going to benefit, consultants and construction companies, things like that would be benefiting from it, or groups that would not be paying it, which would be for the bus riders or people are in carpools. And so, of course, they're for it. They're not going to pay for it. I think what will happen is the free market system, as gas prices go up and up, that people do economize and they do double up on their own. And I think there is a resilience in the American people that they can do that. They don't have to be told to do that by their government. I think that we need to learn from the past, learn that, protect ourselves from what this could become in the future. And one of the things that worked out well in the past, when we had a crisis when the 35W bridge collapsed, that we were able to, much to MnDOT's credit, that the 94-280 corridor was able to expand and use their shoulders very quickly and alleviate a major crisis here in the city. So I think moving things or expanding to the lanes to these to the shoulders, I think, is very doable. So I'm not, my argument isn't with that. I think we should just go ahead and do that and allow the free market system to correct for itself and just guard ourselves against some high-tech highway robbery down the road. Thank you.
Thank you for Mr. your Chair. Testimony. Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question for the mayor. So you believe in the concept of the high occupancy lane, but you're against charging it. Would you have any opposition to this project if there was a HOV lane that encouraged bus use, motorcycle use, multi-passenger car use, but didn't have the fees associated with it? Would you be supportive of that?
I guess what I would see, if you just had the high capacity in that lane, then there's going to be a lot of that capacity of that lane that's wasted that isn't being used by other cars. You can see that, again, you can see some of that in Chicago area where they have some express lanes that will they'll be either congested or in the other lanes that aren't express lanes are moving or vice versa type of thing. So I think that they could be expanded and just used for everybody. And I think if we're looking about high occupancy, I think people are going to get to do that. Personally, I carpool to our work, but we don't take any of the freeways. We just do that because we're economizing because of gas. And
Senator Rust.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two comments that the gentleman made that caught my attention was, first of all, the system around Chicago. And you may know that right now the state of Illinois is proposing, in order to deal with truck traffic, an additional corridor coming down the west side of, I don't know if it's still in Cook County. Well, yeah, it would be in Cook County, coming down through Piatone and going east, so that the trucks would not be part of that toll system anymore. And the express purpose of it is indeed to reduce congestion. And with regard to general toll lanes, which are used throughout the country that are not part of either a hot lane or an HOV lane, I would, and that once in place, never done away with. I don't know whether it was during Ms. Wybera's tenure, but in fact, the Commonwealth of Virginia did get rid of a toll lane in Virginia Beach. They made good on their promise with regard to a general toll lane, and they did decommission the toll lane. You can now go from Richmond to Virginia Beach, which I do frequently during the year, and you do not have to pay, you no longer have to pay a toll. But but these systems are, I think, a different animal, and I think we need to understand that it's not a toll lane that everybody pays regardless. We're not talking about three lanes of traffic on which people pay tolls. This is a very different kind of system, and it's not just like the Illinois Toll Road or any of the other major toll roads that go through Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, et cetera, West Virginia.
It's Mr. Chair and Senator, would agree this isn't exactly like the Illinois Toll Road, but it started off with one, and that's what my point is, that this starts off with this type of lane and eventually expands to others.
I'm glad to hear that. They were never HOV lanes.
That one did, was able to reduce that.
HOT lines.
The other issue is where the funds would go, and we're talking today, it's a little bit of confusion back and forth. Is it going in a general fund? Is it going just for this corridor? Is it going for mass transit and things like that? That's going to continue to change over time. And so nobody here in this room can guarantee that we won't expand the toll system here, or that the funding for that will go back into fixing those roads in particular, which the public expects it to happen. So that's part of the issue. We're down a slope towards an issue of more taxation on people. So thank you.
Thank you.
Sir. Mr. Chair, Senators, I'm the mayor of a northern suburb, Columbus, Minnesota, and I question the solution, and I'm opposed to the concept as well as many of my constituents. Tolls are not the correct method. It's increasing bureaucracy. It's intrusion into our privacy of where we are, how many miles we traveled. I think this level of efficiency, which you can't argue with, is not the proper solution. We will be charging people to get to work on time. We will be charging people to get to our businesses up in Columbus. That's $2.5 million just last year that people didn't have to spend in the free market system. So it increased $2 million worth of bureaucracy. MinPass is not the only solution. There are other solutions. I don't believe, from my attending of the meetings, I don't believe anyone's looked at any other solutions other than MinPass, because MinPass is the solution of choice without an open-minded look. I would encourage you to look further into other solutions. Adding lanes does solve the problem. Adding lanes does increase jobs. Adding lanes does increase prosperity to the whole community. I would ask you not to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Next up, we have two citizens, Mr. Ellenwood and Tatro. I think that's French.
Tatro. But as a dumb Frenchman, we never knew how to pronounce it. So you're probably right.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the committee.
My name is Steve Ellenwood, and I'm just a very concerned citizen of what we're doing with our roads and our bridges in this state, and how many things we are walking away from and doing these kinds of things. But two things stand out very profoundly to me today, and I'm going away from what I had prepared because this seems to be extremely important. If you look at the map up here and look at 35E, we're going to put a MinPass lane in that's supposed to relieve congestion, and I'll come back to that for a second. But if I look at both ends of that, I see that it ends. We're going to put a fourth lane in. Does that fourth lane continue? Where do you have to go? Anybody been on a construction site? The zipper method works by slowing traffic down. So you've got congestion at both ends of 35E now. You put that MinPass lane in, going to race like crazy to either end of it, and what do you have to do? Or are you going to expand so we have that MinPass lane that goes all the way to Forest Lake and all the way down to Burnsville or wherever it's going to end up? All of a sudden, you've just created more congestion for a few people that may use it, and, of course, our buses. So what have you accomplished? The second major piece of this is, maybe you guys didn't pick up on what these people have talked about. They said that you add another lane and it relieves congestion all the way across that 35E. But for some reason, it has to be a toll road. I'm confused. If you put another lane in it, whether it's toll road or not, is it going to relieve congestion? So I leave you with those two questions. What are you going to do with the congestion at either end of this thing? And is toll road the only way that we can relieve congestion across 35E in that specific area?
Thank you for your testimony. Sir.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and esteemed members of the committee here. My name is Bob Tatra. I'm a citizen from Woodbury, and concerned about the transit and transportation problems we have. I think that just a general comment, I don't think we've built enough roads in the last 25 years, and I don't know why that is, but that doesn't place a burden on you because you're just new legislators here, but I think in the past maybe some of the folks who've been here maybe should have thought more about building roads, but that's another whole other subject. The MinPass is a very interesting thing. I started looking at the history of it last night, and the original plans for it were interesting to me because there's no mention of any constitutionality as a basis for establishing toll roads on the citizens of the state. The only article in the Minnesota Constitution, 14, talks about a public highway system and doesn't talk anything about permitting or, you know, promoting toll roads. So where this comes from, I'm not sure, but evidently back in 2003, people weren't concerned about whether or not it was a constitutional factor, but I think you should be concerned about it. Everybody pays for these highways. It comes from taxes on cars and gasoline, et cetera. And in fact, it mentions in the Constitution we can place an onerous tax on cars because it's going to pay for the roads. So I think there's a bit of an elitist element here. I mean, you've got people who can afford to hop on this with their little electronic gadget, hop on this road and go a little faster. But what it really comes down to is you're not really relieving congestion. You're just displacing it or rearranging it. And this is borne out by a little open house we had in Woodbury not long ago on April 5th, in which the Gateway Corridor people came out, and they talked to us about alternatives. And it was interesting because they had about six alternatives, and they all involved some type of mass transit, which I realize we're not really strictly talking about, or this or light rail in many cases. And it was very interesting because I talked to one of the planners or managers there. I think her name was Ms. Eiler, and I said, "Well, what about the congestion factor?" And she said, "Well, you know, we have a way to evaluate congestion," and they had a lettering system or something. And I said, "It doesn't really relieve congestion. Only in a couple of alternatives, maybe it goes from one letter to another. So it's not a big congestion reliever." And I said, "Well, you know, so what are we doing here?" And it turns out that what they really are doing is trying to rearrange the way we live. I think they think that we should live in a denser fashion. And, you know, that's their opinion, that's their philosophy, but that's what it was. One young lady who was sitting right in front of myself and a colleague with me asked the question, "Well, why can't we build more lanes? And, you know, why can't we if we need transit, let's have it. But why can't we build more lanes?" And nobody could answer her. And finally it came out, well, we just don't have that philosophy. So it's either these alternatives or nothing. And so that, I think that's part of it. I think we have to consider that. So the congestion is really a difficult thing to evaluate. Even from what I've heard from the testifiers here, I think, you know, to put a hard number on congestion, well, what does that mean? I think from one of the senators here who said, "Yeah, I'm so happy when I go whizzing past the truck that's slowed down the other lane." Well, you know, that tells you right there, we've just rearranged a little congestion. And so, and that's fine. I appreciate the people who can, you know, hold up their card and go by faster. But I don't think it really, I think lane building, and as a matter of fact, it came out that to build a lane is much cheaper than to, say, build a light rail, which is just for a few people going, you know, a short distance. So I think we really have to consider the lane building aspect. I think we have to look at this in its entirety. And, you know, we are a people, and this came out at this the Gateway Corridor people who came out to talk to us. You know, we are a people who have been this is an American tradition to have your personal vehicle and to take the route you want to take. And, you know, if we're going to pay for these roads, I mean, maybe we should be able to do that. I think that to try and assign lanes in any manner, way, or shape is always going to be wrought with difficulty. I mean, if we could design some perfect ways to get people to merge better, probably the merging is the biggest slowdown anywhere. Once you get on that freeway, you can go like crazy. But I think if someone, a smart person, can design ways to merge these lanes better, that's what we really need. And not a lot of electronics that are going to charge us so much. And with regard to the financing, I don't want to quibble with anyone who wrote the bill, but it looked to me like in the earlier aspects of it, the financing was going to go to the improvement of the corridor itself, wherever that corridor was. And now it looks like it's going to go to MinPass, which is, you know, fine. I mean, but there's a little bit of that financial aspect. And I appreciate your listening to my comments. I I really hope and that you will all carefully think about this so-called solution. The other thing, and it came out at our little presentation, was that in the Woodbury from the Gateway Corridor, folks, was that these BRT lanes are ultimately placeholders for light rail. And I thought, what? And she said, yes, this person told me that. And anywhere there's a BRT lane, that in and of itself establishes a place where the light rail can be put in. And she's rather proud of telling me that. And in fact, she did tell it to the entire congregation there in the Woodbury City Hall at that time. I think her name was Leitner or something like that. She's like a planner for Lisna Leitner. But at any rate, so now I'm not suggesting MinPass is going to be a placeholder, but I mean, you know, at some point maybe it will be equivalent to a BRT lane. But the BRT lane is designed to be a placeholder for light rail. And I thought that was very interesting. And if anyone has any questions that I can try and answer, I'd sure be happy to try to do so. And thank you very much for listening to me, Mr. Chairman. And well,
thank you for your testimony. Members. I just would like to clarify one thing about the semi-truck pulled over on the side comment that Senator Rest made. She was referring to a truck that was in the MinPass lane that an officer had pulled over for an enforcement action, not that they were elitist and flashing their card at that individual saying, ha, 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 I just wanted to be sure that you understood that that wasn't the case there.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Hey, thank you for your testimony. I think we're going to move on to a vote on this and discussion on the part of the committee. And I would move that Senate File 2597 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any further discussion? Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I would like to offer the A1 amendment.
Okay. Do members have a copy of the A1 amendment?
No.
Senator Lilly offers the A1 amendment to the amendment. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair and members, much of the testimony that we have heard today refers to the fact that we do have congestion in this corridor, and the congestion is significant. It's impacting traffic. It's impacting the ability to move goods and services around the East Metro area. At the same time, we've talked about the tolling facility of the MinPass system. And what this amendment would do is it would delete sections 1 and 2, which is the toll functions of this, and basically it would expand the capacity of the system without implementing the onerous tolling system. The additional lanes would be available to all drivers, and we would need the lane to alleviate the congestion, but we really don't need the tolling function. We have heard testimony that the tolling function really does not add revenue for MnDOT. It is a method of paying for the tolling system in and of itself. And I believe that this would actually implement the system within MnDOT. It directs MnDOT to add the additional lanes without adding the tolling function.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lilly, I just ask how you propose to pay for this, how the Commissioner of Transportation will pay for this.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, if I could ask Ms. Brzozowski to address the current payments that are in the MinPass system, would this be your area? Okay. And would this actually cost money or save the state money?
Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lilly, if I understand the amendment correctly, all that we are doing is allowing the expansion of capacity on that stretch of road, but not allowing that lane to be a tollway. Now, MnDOT can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the plans already to include that lane. The revenue from future tollway would go toward paying off a lot of those improvements, but not the actual asphalt of that piece so it would be just the installation of the tolling facilities and the equipment and some of the operations at MnDOT to cover that piece. So it would be I would invite MnDOT to correct me if I'm wrong, because I feel like I'm wading into an area beyond my capacity here. But I believe from what I'm reading that this would be allowable within the current scope of the project.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Anybody from MnDOT? Mr. Thompson, if you'd like to share your thoughts on this.
So on the question on whether let's can clarify the question exactly you'd like me to follow up on.
Senator Lilly.
As I understand the question and what we're trying to clarify, MnDOT, within its operating budgets, is paying for the changes to the asphalt, the bridges, et cetera. The funding from MnPass itself, the toll funding, is basically there to pay for the cost of policing and enforcing the new lanes, and also for the systems that are required to enforce the tolling functions. So generally, I think what my understanding is that MnDOT, through its original budget, through its budgeting process, is paying for the expansion of the roadway. MnPass tolling is paying for the system of toll collection and enforcement. Would that be correct?
Mr. Thompson.
That is correct. The reconstruction of 35E, all these projects would come out of our capital program.
Senator Hall.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I came into this meeting here today very supportive of MnPass, but what I've heard here today has had me modify my position somewhat. You know, I'm still very supportive of the HOV lanes, and I'm very supportive of that. I'm just not understanding why we're charging people to use those. I mean, what we really should do is be encouraging people to either, you know, if they can use mass transit on the bus, they can use a cost-efficient motorcycle in that lane, they can ride share, they can have another person with them. And when we look at the fees that we're charging, it's not even covering the operation cost of it, and none of the money is getting invested back into the actual roadway. And that's why I asked that question about how non-users feel about it, because I think what you want to do is you want to encourage conservation. You want to encourage people to ride share, and I think we want people to use those lanes. But when we get down to charging for that lane, I don't see a strong case for that. I mean, we're saying, well, we're actually encouraging people with means or whatever to drive solo and drive down those lanes. I mean, we're encouraging if you've got the means to do that, or if you're in a hurry, if you don't plan ahead, we're just encouraging people to not conserve. And so, you know, as supportive, I'm somewhat supportive of Senator Lilly's amendment here, but, you know, I would like to modify that amendment to say that the lane, at least on the left side, should be an HOV lane. I mean, the construction should be an HOV lane, but it shouldn't be a MnPass lane. It shouldn't be that we have to pay to drive down that. And I think that's long-term planning. Like the other gentleman said, we don't want it to turn into a toll road at some point. But long-term, if you've got I think that the MnPass lane as it is right now is somewhat confusing to people that see that price up there and think, well, I've got, you know, three people in the car, but should I really have one of those gadgets that, you know, that deduct the fee from it? And I would like to encourage us to, you know, if we're not taking those funds or getting enough funds to pay for it, if it's not as, you know, and I don't think we need to look at, and that's why I asked how many FTEs we have, you know, doing that. And I think we should know how many full-time equivalents we have in that program. I mean, we're coming here for this. We should, that information should be readily available. So, you know, I don't know if Ms. Brzozowski could come up with something that would amend this amendment to construct an HOV lane, but that's what I would like to do with this amendment. I want to see us go that direction and encourage that conservation, but I don't believe it should be just that I can pay for it and use it. So do we have something for that?
Ms. Brzozowski.
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe,
with regard to the A1 amendment, on 1.7 and 1.8, delete the sentence that begins on 1.7, the lanes, and insert, notwithstanding section 160.93, subdivision 1, the commissioner shall operate the lanes as high occupancy vehicle lanes and shall not charge fees for the use of the lanes.
That's almost brilliant in such a short period of time, Ms. Berzovsky, I tell you. You got to hand it to them, to the staff. They're terrific. Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, members, and to your point, if you think about what a MinPass system is, it is a high occupancy vehicle lane, first and foremost. Transit right, and we encourage trying to move as many people as possible in that lane. So we do our coordinated transit investments first. So our system on 394, 35W has a built-in system of park and rides, express bus services. And then next in the tier is the carpools. Carpools, we do everything we can to encourage carpool use through marketing. But carpools are the tough one. Carpools are tough to form. They're depending on where you work, who you have around with you. So what we found is that increasing carpool use is probably our biggest challenge. Though our corridors with MinPass have sustained their carpool use. Ride carpool when they were HOV lanes only versus after MinPass, so we still have the same or a little bit more carpoolers, which is a trend that's better than the rest of the country. In most places around the country where they have HOV only lanes, the carpool use has declined over time. And so this is a coordinated HOV system our goal is to move as many people as possible. If you look at the peak hour on 35W, the MinPass lane is carrying almost as much as you cross the Minnesota River, almost as many people in the peak hour as the other two general purpose lanes. So it's efficiency, trying to get that through transit ridership, carpool second, and then the dynamic pricing allows you to use the market to sell that other space to those who choose to use it. And so we're using the available space to complement the HOV use, which is there also.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Thompson, Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Thompson, do you have any figures on what, if you remove that option, if you remove that pay-for option, what would that do to carpools? Would that increase the number of carpools, or would that, I mean, what's the effect on that?
Mr. Thompson.
What the figures, we could go back to what we did on 394. When we added MinPass, or I believe our carpools went up slightly after we added MinPass. On 35W, we're doing the evaluation. We don't have the results yet. And so we can look at it from that, and then we can look at the national perspective of what's happening in carpool formation and growth or lack thereof of growth. And so at best, MinPass has protected the carpool ridership that we had in those corridors versus the national trend, which would have seen a decline most likely if we would have followed national trends. We don't know because we altered the system and added MinPass. So, but we do, transit ridership is growing at a faster rate in those corridors than in non-MinPass corridors. And so we're moving far more people. That's our efficiency. And then what we do know from 394 is it was a carpool lane. We added MinPass because there was space available that we could use and give to those who wanted to choose to pay a fee.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Hall,
I'm having trouble following how charging for solo drivers increases the carpool. I would think it would be the opposite. I mean, if I can afford to pay for the privilege of driving by myself, I'm just. I just think that's the wrong direction to go. I think that that's not conserving energy. Charging you or charging anyone for the privilege of driving solo is not in the best interest of the conservation or the energy outlook for our company or for our. I mean, just look down any of our highways and see how many people are driving solo, and with this we're encouraging that. We're saying we're market basing it, but we're encouraging it. And the fact that the funds are just going to control the system and not being invested into the roadway, and we don't have any date certain of when it's going to turn, that's not cost-effective from a business standpoint anyhow. I mean, if I'm going to charge a few people for my service, but I'm not recovering my cost for designing the system, then let's just make it a free lane and make it an HOV free lane.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm sensitive to the time, so I'll try to be quickly. I'm going to support the Howe amendment because it makes what I think is a bad amendment better. I don't support the underlying amendment, however. I think I would speak against the underlying amendment. Just as a practical matter, I participated in a carpool during one of the transit strikes of a number of years ago and discovered how inflexible and how difficult they really are. You have to leave your pencil hanging in the air at 5 o'clock because that's when everyone, has to gather at the car and go, and you can't, there's just no flexibility to schedule. Carpools are highly impractical. I think what is most compelling, just to respond to Senator Howe's points about why HOTs, allowing the SOVs into the HOV lanes. Probably what's most compelling for me are some of the points that Mr. Thompson and some of the witnesses made earlier. The occasional user, folks who need to get through otherwise a slow corridor a little bit faster because of daycare or some other compelling need for in their personal life, and the business folks who need to get through a little bit faster in support of their services and their goods that they're providing to our economy. We are absolutely not going to be able to build our way out of congestion. That was stated earlier. Total fallacy, complete myth, extremely expensive for not a lot of transportation delivered. Over time, those highways fill up. And if you don't believe me, I've said it before, go to Orange County, California, where the freeways cannot get any wider than they are today, and they are absolute parking lots. It's crying out for options and flexibility and a multitude of modes to throw at our transportation system, so people have choices.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Dibble, I would not just oppose Senator Howe's verbal amendment to this amendment, but I also oppose the underlying amendment, and I hope that the members of the committee will vote both down. But we've heard extremely compelling testimony today about the engineering factors that have gone into the study of MinPass lanes and how effective they are for our roadways and what an important tool they are to relieve congestion at a point in time when we don't have the money in our transportation budget to continue to build roads in the first place. We don't have the right-of-way in the second place. And we are looking for alternatives. We heard that the congestion would be relieved on 94 coming from the east and from the west because of this project. So, as we look for solutions that can work not just for today, if we approve this amendment, we will have a solution. We heard the testimony. We'll have a solution for maybe a year, maybe two. But then we'll be right back handcuffed again into a system that we have no alternatives in. So I just encourage members to look to the future, look to the engineering, listen to the testimony that we heard today, and support the bill as it is, authorizing MnDOT to move forward. And as far as the dollars go, that they will be reinvested back into the system in support of the entire system. It's not money that I believe that is wasted or is unnecessary. And so I would just encourage us all to just take a step back, look at what's going to happen in the next 10, 15 years, and weigh our options very carefully. Do we want a short-term solution that will be congested again, or do we want to leave some options available as we move forward into the future? So, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I came into this meeting with an open mind. I hadn't been lobbied one way or the other on it, and I just from the testimony that was given here today, this business model is not a business model that I can endorse on the MinPass. I mean, I can endorse the HOV lane, but we should encourage that from a standpoint of what's long term, and it shouldn't be it shouldn't be a deal that we just encourage people to drive a SUV down an express lane because they can pay to do that. And I don't think that's the right direction we should handle, and I don't think it's in our best interest in Minnesota to start charging people for the privilege of doing things. I mean, we could expand this to a lot of other things other than our roadway. And so I would ask members to support the amendment. I think it makes sense, and I would move that amendment as an oral amendment to the A1.
Senator Rust.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I disagree with Senator Howe and with Senator Dibble. I don't believe his oral amendment improves what I consider to be a bad amendment, and I, inspired by your comments, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be voting no on both.
Thank you, Senator Rest. I appreciate those comments. Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, as long as I put it out there publicly, and now I've changed my mind. You were so persuasive, so people don't get surprised when I vote against my kid.
I'm happy that I'm persuasive with members of the folks on the other side of the aisle. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, members, I believe that we are referring or talking now about the Howe Amendment, not my underlying amendment. I'm interested in all of the conversation about my amendment at this point, but I believe we are talking about the Howe Amendment. And members, I would like you to know that I do support this amendment. I do believe that we need to invest in our transit system, transportation system. We need to find ways to get vehicles and get services and get the means to move people and products around our metropolitan area. And if one of those methods that increases the transportation system efficiency is having HOV lanes, I think that is an important method to move traffic, and I would support the Howe Amendment.
And
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, I'd just ask on my amendment portion, I'd ask for a roll call on that.
Roll call has been requested. We will have a roll call. Senator Cruz.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Howe, I do support the underlying amendment, but I'm going to stand in opposition to your oral amendment. And the reason for that is I think we leave the door open, if we leave this as an HLV lane, to potentially having it be a MinPass lane in the future. And my inherent desire to have the underlying amendment and opposition to the MinPass program is I stand firmly in the belief that we as taxpayers have paid for these lanes already. And it just doesn't sit well with me to say that we're going to be charged another $2 to $20 or whatever it is to use these lanes in the future. And I know that if we leave this door open, if we leave it to be an HLV lane, then that could still happen in the future if so desired. And I want to make sure that we don't leave that door open.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Senator Cruz, I'd appreciate your support on this amendment, because if this amendment is attached, I can support Senator Lilly's amendment. If my oral amendment to it is, then I can't support that. So I'm hoping you will support this amendment being attached.
So I think we've had a very good and lively discussion on this. Bob will take the roll.
Righty. Senator Kimsey.
No.
Senator Howe.
Yes.
Senator Dibble.
No.
Senator DeCryf.
Yes.
Senator Gazelka.
Yes.
Senator Koch. Senator Cruz.
No.
Senator Lilly.
Yes.
Senator Lurie.
No.
Senator Perry. Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest.
No.
Senator Sharon. Senator Sieben.
No.
Senator Wolf.
There being four yes and seven no, the Howe verbal amendment does not prevail. Now to the A1 amendment. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to speak in opposition to the Lilly amendment. I think that I understand where he and some of the opponents are coming from, because I think if I'm not mistaken, when the first MinPass proposal came forward, I was highly skeptical of the MinPass program for some of the reasons that were explained here today. However, my position has evolved because I've seen the beneficial results, and the testimony from MnDOT, I think, has been compelling that, yes, HOV lanes are great, but the comments that we heard today was that if they are strictly HOV lanes, they're not at their full capacity, thereby not benefiting the rest of the traveling public on that corridor. So I'm persuaded by the testimony from the St. Paul Chamber, from the unanimous support on the Washington County Board, from the Rush Line Corridor, people, and speaking as an East Metro legislator who, when I get bottlenecked coming into the Capitol in the morning, it's because we're hitting that 35E corridor and we're slowed down in coming across 94. So I do think that this is a good solution for this corridor at this time, and I would encourage members to vote down the Lilly amendment. I appreciate that MnDOT is making this investment in the East Metro, and think that it's the right time to move forward with this.
Any other comments? We've had a very good and robust discussion. Senator Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I would like to ask members to support this amendment. I do think it's important. I would like to, I don't know if it's clarify, but expand upon something that Senator Sieben said. The chamber did testify in support of this, St. Paul Area Chamber. I took that to be they supported the expansion of lanes in this corridor. They do support the MnPass as a method to achieve it, but mostly it's an expansion of lanes within the corridor, and that is what I believe that I am supporting with this amendment. Secondly, the Washington County Board, I believe the testimony was that the Ramsey County Board supported unanimously, but I don't recall that the Washington County Board supported unanimously. In fact, I have spoken with county commissioners who I'm not sure they do support this, so that's just a clarification. But to the amendment, we do need to invest in our transportation system. This is a key. This is crucial. We do need to expand our roads. We need to expand our lanes and our availability of these systems. But make no mistake, members, if you vote for this, you are voting for an increase in taxes. You are voting for an increase in fees within our system. And that is something that I am opposed to. I have told the residents of my community that I will not vote for an increase in fees or taxes within my area, and I believe that that is what we are doing today. We are seeking a method to increase taxes for a system, a transportation system, which we are already paying for through other methods. We are paying for this system. And I would encourage all members to vote for my amendment, and I would ask for a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call is granted. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, to point out to Senator Lilly, there's a resolution of support from the Board of Washington County Commissioners that I see that one commissioner was marked absent, but the other four commissioners did support this resolution, which says that they support implementation of the MnPass system. It explicitly says that Washington County Board hereby supports the implementation of the MnPass system in the Twin Cities region. And earlier in it, it talks specifically about that corridor. Further, the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce has a letter of support in our packet that says we're supportive of MnDOT's proposal to add MnPass on the I-35E corridor, so long as the excess revenue generated by the operations on 35E are used solely for the additional support, which I think the chairman then clarified that is in the language of the bill that's before us. So, again, I just, for the record, wanted to clarify that. That's it.
Thank you, Senator Sieben. And in the essence of time here and getting ready for our floor session coming up, I think we'll go ahead and take the roll.
Senator Gimsey.
No.
Senator Howe.
No.
Senator Dibble.
No.
Senator DeCryf.
Yes.
Senator Grzelka.
Yes.
Senator Koch. Senator Cruz?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Lori?
No.
Senator Perry? Senator Reinert?
No.
Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Sharon? Senator Sieben?
No.
Senator Wolf?
There being four yeses, seven noes, the amendment does not.